Mrs. Eddy by Hugh Studdard Kennedy. Chapter 48. The Case in Court and Its Outcome. Pleasant View, Concord, May 16, 1907. Honorable Judge Chamberlain, Concord, New Hampshire. Respected Sir, it is over 40 years that I have attended personally to my secular affairs, to my income, investments, deposits, expenditures, and to my employees. I have personally selected all my investments, except in one or two instances, and have paid for the same. The increasing demands upon my time, labors, and thoughts, and yearning for more peace and to have my property and affairs carefully taken care of for the persons and purposes designated in my last will, influenced me to select a board of trustees to take charge of my property, namely, Honorable Henry M. Baker, Mr. Archibald McClellan, Mr. Josiah E. Fernald. I had contemplated doing this before the present proceedings were brought, or I knew aught about them, and I consulted Lawyer Streeter about the method. I selected said trustees because I had implicit confidence in each one of them as to honesty and business capacity. No person influenced me to make this selection. I find myself able to select the trustees I need without the help of others. I gave them my property to take care of because I wanted it protected and myself relieved of the burden of doing this. They have agreed with me to take care of my property, and I consider this agreement a great benefit to me already. This suit was brought without my knowledge, and is being carried on contrary to my wishes. I feel that it is not for my benefit in any way, but for my injury, and I know it is not needed to protect my person or property. The present proceedings test my trust in divine love. My personal reputation is assailed, and some of my students and trusted friends are cruelly and unjustly and wrongly accused. Mr. Calvin Fry and other students often ask me to receive persons whom I desire to see, but decline to receive solely because I find that I cannot serve two masters. I cannot be a Christian Scientist except I leave all for Christ. Trusting I have not exceeded the bounds of propriety in the statements herein made by me, I remain most respectfully yours, Mary Baker Eddy. This letter, written in her own unmistakable hand, although not made public until later, marked an important point in Mrs. Eddy's defense. The case, as has been seen, had been narrowed down to the single question of Mrs. Eddy's competence at the time she executed her trust deed. And her letter to Judge Chamberlain, to which both sides would have had access, must have filled Senator Chandler and his colleagues with misgiving. The defense, in fact, as far as the press was concerned, was having it all its own way. The letter to Judge Chamberlain was clearly not that of a woman, either physically or mentally incapacitated. And the testimony of Curtis, Parker, or Brisbane, and several others, all went to show that the very reverse was the case. The petitioners, moreover, had been no more successful in securing evidence as to the existence of any plot involving Calvin Fry or anyone else at Pleasant View, while Mrs. Eddy's financial affairs were found to be in perfect order. In fact, the prevailing outside opinion, as reflected in the press, was that the petitioner's case was lost before it came to court. After many delays, the case was at last ready for hearing and was opened at the courthouse in Concord on August 13, 1907. A formidable array of counsel appeared on both sides, the action being heard by Judge Aldrich, sitting as master with two co-masters, Dr. George F. Jelly, an alienist of Boston, and Hosea W. Parker of Claremont, New Hampshire. From early morning on the opening day, many people had been waiting to gain admission, and the limited seating accommodation of the courtroom was taxed to the uttermost soon after the doors were opened. Senator Chandler and his colleagues for the petitioners had a difficult task. Again and again, as the case was unfolded, the senior counsel for the petitioners strove to broaden the issue, but was brought back each time by Judge Aldrich to an admission of the fact that there was one question and one question only before the court, and that was Mrs. Eddy's competence on the 6th day of March, 1907, the day on which she signed the deed turning over her estate and its management to trustees. There was, of course, the question of misappropriation prior to the granting of the trusteeship. But although General Streeter, in behalf of the defendants, repeatedly challenged Senator Chandler to produce the slightest evidence of misfeasance in this respect, neither then nor at any time later were such charges advanced. Driven thus into a corner, it became apparent that Senator Chandler intended to rest his case and build it up upon a charge of general insanity, and that he sought to prove his point by showing that Mrs. Eddy was subject to delusion to a point where it usurped the place of reason and controlled the will. He set forth a chain of six delusions, of which he claimed Mrs. Eddy was subject. 1. That the world does not exist. 2. That she was supernaturally inspired. 3. That she could heal miraculously. 4. That her philosophy was destined to supplant others. 5. That there is such a thing as malicious animal magnetism. 6. That malicious animal magnetism is the cause of terrible evils. The court, however, emphatically upheld General Streeter's contentions that however interesting such matters might be in themselves, they clearly had nothing to do with the case. As a matter of law, General Streeter declared, these suggestions of delusions, which simply mean that Mrs. Eddy believes in some things that Mr. Chandler and others don't believe in, unless they are in some way connected with the transactions of her business affairs, are absolutely incompetent. The discussion was continued back and forth for some time, but in the end, the court decided that the only way to reach an answer to the issue and the readiest way was for the court itself to examine Mrs. Eddy. And to this end, Judge Aldrich proposed that the court adjourn to Pleasant View, rather than require Mrs. Eddy to undertake a personal appearance in Concord. In deciding to journey to Pleasant View, rather than to require Mrs. Eddy to appear in court, the masters concurred in pointing out that such action on their part should not be construed into an assumption that Mrs. Eddy was not able to come to Concord. It is no disrespect, Judge Aldrich declared, to say of any woman of Mrs. Eddy's years that she is entitled to every court clemency. We think it entirely reasonable, out of deference to her, to go there if desired. And so, on the afternoon of August 14, 1907, the court, accompanied by leading counsel on both sides, adjourned to Pleasant View. The coming of the court seems to have made no unusual stir there. It was a lovely summer day, with just that wisp of haze and that breath of sweet odor which tell of approaching fall. All the windows at Pleasant View were wide open, and Mrs. Eddy, as she entered her study on her return from her customary drive, remarked with quiet humor as she looked out on it all from her tower window, "Well, the Nexters have a fine day for their visit." Some weeks previously, Edwin J. Park, news editor of the Boston Globe, had interviewed Mrs. Eddy at Pleasant View and had given an intimate picture in his paper of Mrs. Eddy at home. Like Brisbane, he seems, during the interview, to have been kept in a constant state of astonishment at her memory for dates, names, and circumstances which appeared to him marvelous, at the ease with which she moved from one subject to another, and at her vivid interest in the world around her. He seems, however, to have been specially impressed with the fact that Mrs. Eddy still ran her house and household in the full tradition of a New England housewife. Several times he reverts to the subject and tells how, in the end, Mrs. Eddy, seeking to convince him, rang for her housekeeper, who appeared shortly afterwards, a neat, wholesome-looking young woman, in the attire which she had worn in her duties about the house. And then he continues, "She started in to apologize for her appearance, although there was nothing about it that required apology. Mrs. Eddy quieted her with the remark, "Never mind, dear, you are all right," and then continued, smiling, "Are you my housekeeper?" "Yes, ma'am," affirmed the pleased and radiant girl, bowing and smiling. "Do I go downstairs and look around every day and see that everything is running smoothly?" asked Mrs. Eddy. "Yes, ma'am, you surely do," answered the housekeeper. "Am I careful and observant?" asked Mrs. Eddy. "You surely are, ma'am." "Have I arranged the furniture and shown just how I wanted it?" "Yes, ma'am. You told me just how everything should be." "That will be all, dear," concluded Mrs. Eddy, and the housekeeper bowed herself out. And then Edwin Park goes on to tell how Mrs. Eddy dwelt happily on the harmony of her household and the devotion of its members. How Mr. Fry had been with her for 25 years. Mrs. Sargent for 18. Her cook for 15. And how all were most faithful. Promptly at 2 o'clock, the carriages from Concord drove up to the front door, and a few minutes later, Mrs. Eddy was receiving the court and attending counsel in her study. It must have been a curious scene of quickly changing emotions. The justices, having regard for Mrs. Eddy's years, had evidently prepared themselves to act with the utmost gentleness and consideration. And when the first greetings were over, Judge Aldrich at once set out to reassure her. "Mrs. Eddy," he said, "the gentlemen here wish to have an interview with you, and we desire to make this call as comfortable as possible for you. And we want you to let us know if we weary you." Even as he spoke, he must have felt that the circumstances, as they were not at all as he had fancied them. There was nothing of the world's lurid picturing in this quiet, composed, venerable woman who sat at her desk by the big open window and surveyed them all so calmly and kindly. "I am very glad to see you," she said, "and I thank you." For a time, the court endeavored to maintain its formality. The first questions were depressingly routine. What was her native town? How long had she lived in Concord? And then Judge Aldrich made another brave show of kindness and consideration. "Well, the gentlemen present want to ask you some questions, and we all want to make this interview as pleasant as possible for you." "Thank you very much," Mrs. Eddy interjected. And the judge continued, "We want to have regard all the time to your comfort and convenience. And if you feel at all fatigued, we want to have you say so at any time." Mrs. Eddy again thanked him, assured him that, save for a slight deafness, she was perfectly well and could work many hours, day or night, without any fatigue when it was in the line of spiritual labor. And so Judge Aldrich went on for a time with his formal questions. But it was not long before a change came over the scene. The judge had asked Mrs. Eddy about Pleasant View and how she acquired it. Dr. Jelly had supplemented Judge Aldrich's questions by asking if the place had been laid out under Mrs. Eddy's directions. And Justice Parker had asked about the fruit trees. And it was not long before they were all discussing the questions raised with keen interest, with Mrs. Eddy in the lead, telling how she cut down scrub pine and planted fruit trees, how people had laughed at her, but how she had said, "You will see, it will be pretty, pretty soon." And now, instead of the decrepit old woman to whom they had come prepared to help along to her answers with tender encouragement, they found themselves enjoying a summer afternoon with a delightful hostess, who kept them all at ease and immensely interested. They asked her about Concord, about the gifts she had made from time to time to the city, about the church she had built there, and about her friendly connections in the countryside. Then Judge Aldrich turned to the question of finance. He had, he said, some insurance maturing in the near future. What would Mrs. Eddy consider a good investment for it? If she had $100,000 to invest, what kind of investment would she consider sound? And Mrs. Eddy, on the whole, preferred municipal bonds. Stocks might be all right for anyone who could look after them, but she preferred not to have the trouble of it. And the only time she had gone contrary to her judgment in this respect, she had lost by it. How did she judge as to the value of municipal bonds? Well, she had a little book which gave definitely the population of the cities and their money value. And when she saw that they were large enough in population and valuation to warrant an investment, she made it. And Judge Aldrich remarked that he thought such judgment pretty sound. Next, they took an excursion into Christian Science, became tremendously interested, and then had misgivings. Misgivings as to whether they were justified in bringing the religious question into it. And so, after a brief private consultation, abandoned the subject and went on to discuss such questions as books, letter writing, and accounts. From these, they passed to music. Dr. Jelly wanted to know if she was fond of music, if she was musical in her younger days. And Mrs. Eddy replied that she used to be very fond of music, and although as a child had never been taught, she used to be fond of composing music. And then, as though suddenly remembering something, she told them that she had an artificial singer in her home, and she would be glad for them to hear it before they left. As they got ready to leave, she rang for Calvin Fry and asked him to let her visitors hear the artificial singer on their way out. Mr. Fry assented gladly, Yes, he said. It is a gramophone, gentlemen. But the court was in no hurry to leave. Judge Aldrich wanted to tell Mrs. Eddy about his mother, who was 87 and still quite happy. And Mrs. Eddy was full of interest. Give her my love, she said. God bless her. She is not a day older for her 87 years, if she is, as I am sure she is, growing in grace. And then, as she took his hand in hers, she said simply, if we keep our mind fixed on truth, God, life, and love, he will advance us in our years to a higher understanding. He will change our hope into faith, our faith into spiritual understanding, our words into works, and our ultimate into the fruition of entering into the kingdom. And so there were leave-takings all round, and she remembered everyone, even the stenographer. We have kept you very busy, she said. Thank you for your services. In the hall below, the court and the rest of the company stopped to listen to the gramophone, greatly interested in Mr. Fry's explanation, and no doubt marveling at the dizzy heights modern invention was achieving. Then, as the last record was being played, a message came from Mrs. Eddy. As she sat at her desk when the door had closed behind the last of her visitors, she had evidently come to the conclusion that, although the court had done with her, she ought not to have done with the court. She owed it something yet. They had all learned from what they had seen and heard that none of the things that were being said of her was true. But all that was nothing compared with her message, and her message had been misinterpreted, and misinterpreted even more than her life and person. She must bear testimony to her message, and the court, she was sure of it, would listen. And so she sent down word and asked them all to come up to her room again, as she had forgotten something of importance. When they were assembled once more, she stood by her desk, her back to the great window, which gave a view across the valley to where Mount Monadnock rose up above the skyline, and said how she had a great desire to tell them something quite briefly of the footsteps of Christian Science. And so, as they stood around her, she told them very simply how she had gone in search of healing, from orthodox medical practice to homeopathy, from that to a realization that it was not the drug, but the human mind that was the healer, how she had labored with this human mind through spiritualism, mesmerism, and hypnotism, only to find that God was not in any of it, until at last she came to see that the human mind was but a counterfeit of the real mind, the mind that is God, the mind that was in Christ Jesus. When she finished, everyone was silent for a moment. But if there was any sense of strain, it was immediately broken by Mrs. Eddy. She shook hands around once more. "I thank you," she said, "for your kindness and attention very much." The interview of the Masters with Mrs. Eddy at Pleasant View really involved the collapse of the next friend's case. As the court and the rest of the company made their way down the stairway leading from Mrs. Eddy's study to the hall below, Senator Chandler was heard to remark in a tone of no little bafflement, "She is sharper than a steel trap." Nevertheless, the hearing was resumed immediately on their return to Concord. Judge Aldrich had been careful before dismissing court, as they were about to leave for Pleasant View, to impress upon the counsel that the hearing was not adjourned, that no recess had been taken. "We do not take a recess, really," he said. "The hearing is going on, but going on at another place." And so, at the close of the interview, the Masters and those with them returned at once to the courtroom, where the hearing was continued. Senator Chandler and his colleagues made a brave show for 3 days of carrying on. But it must have been clear to them from the first that the Masters would inevitably interpret their evidence and argument in the light of what they had seen and heard for themselves. In addition to this, the reports of the various alienists appointed to examine Mrs. Eddy in regard to her physical and mental condition were coming in, and although they were not made public until later, they were known by the plaintiff's counsel to be very unfavorable to their case. This was particularly true in regard to the report of Dr. Alan McLean Hamilton, who declared quite unequivocally that far from displaying any sign of mental incapacity, he did not hesitate to say that Mrs. Eddy was both physically and mentally phenomenal. When the court convened on the 6th day of the trial, namely August 21, 1907, Senator Chandler, as senior counsel for the plaintiffs, arose and announced the withdrawal of the suit. Rumors of what was about to happen had spread rapidly, and the little courtroom was crowded as soon as the doors were opened. "May it please the court," Senator Chandler said. "It will, doubtless, be a relief to the Masters to be informed that the counsel for the next friends have this day filed with the court a motion for the dismissal of the pending suit, and that they hereby withdraw their appearance before the Masters without asking from them any finding upon the questions submitted." It was an astute move, for in the matter of law, it not only saved the next friends from riding on to what was inevitable defeat, but effectually barred defendants' counsel from bringing into court, and so making public, the great mass of evidence that had been accumulated to prove Mrs. Eddy's complete physical and mental competence. General Streeter pleaded with the court to refuse the motion, urging that his clients were entitled to every opportunity to establish, beyond all peradventure, the complete competence of the venerable lady who had been rendered the involuntary petitioner in the case. Judge Aldrich, however, ruled that the masters had no choice in the matter, and that in view of the withdrawal of the plaintiffs, there was nothing left to be answered by Mrs. Eddy or decided by us. The case, therefore, stood dismissed without any ruling on the part of the court. The result was, however, accepted everywhere as a signal triumph for Mrs. Eddy and a complete proof of her capacity. As far as Joseph Pulitzer and the New York World were concerned, the outcome of the proceedings was the reverse of all they had hoped. If the press, after the attack on Mrs. Eddy in the previous October, had scourged the world with whips, it now proceeded to scourge it with scorpions. Even the newspapers, most notoriously antagonistic to Mrs. Eddy and her movement, registered a changed attitude almost overnight. The press throughout the country seemed suddenly to develop a pride, not only in the vigor displayed by this woman so long past the age of active service, but in the work she had done and was doing. Everywhere, Mrs. Eddy became good copy. Stories about her were eagerly read. The accounts given of her quiet, good humor, her at times quite disconcerting wit, her freedom from all bitterness, her kindness, her charity, her infectious sense of fun, her refusal to ask for help or cry quarter, seemed to appeal specially to the sporting instinct of press and people. The dismissal of the suit brought by Next Friends against Mrs. Mary Baker G. Eddy, declared the New York American, will be gratifying to all fair-minded people without regard to religious belief. It is now to be hoped that Mrs. Eddy, like all other persons who are acting within their rights, will be left in peace and security. The Free Press of Detroit declared that it had been proved to the satisfaction of the reading public that the venerable woman was in full possession of her mental faculties, and that any reports to the contrary were destitute of foundation. The Daily Herald of Omaha declared by the impressive scene that resulted when Mrs. Eddy was examined at her home, where her courtesy and unfailing good nature, no less than the clarity of her thought and the force and vigor of her expressions, put her persecutors to shame. The effect on the enlightened sentiment of the country was such that the dismissal in short order was an inevitable consequence. Mrs. Eddy's comment on it all was her accustomed one. When these things cease to bless, they will cease to occur. And so, within a week or less, its customary calm had descended once again on Pleasant View, and Concord had returned to its familiar ways. the many reporters who had hovered around the courthouse at all hours, or gathered in knots at the street corners, had gone home, and the lobby of the Eagle Hotel was no longer the scene of momentous off-record discussions.